A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. As always, we are proudly presented by the good community-minded people at Horicon Bank. For some reason, McDonald's is on my mind today. And full disclosure, I don't eat at McDonald's a ton, but I'm kind of fascinated by the chain. I love studying kind of what works and what doesn't, like the pricing and the positioning, kind of what makes you want to eat there. Often, obviously, it's like just pure convenience, especially if you're on a trip, like you can't not stop at McDonald's. But more and more so, it's the promotions that are driving you to a fast food restaurant. And if you're old enough to kind of remember the heyday of the Monopoly game at McDonald's, you got these old school game pieces. You had a game board. You took the pieces home. You filled all the spaces on the board. You won food. You won prizes. And if you got Boardwalk, maybe you won a few bucks too. Well, it's that time of the year again at McDonald's for Monopoly. The game's digital now, but there's also some old school physical components too. And you can swipe them off or you can rip them off certain items. But I think there's kind of a deeper story here. It's like the psychology and the nostalgia of what Monopoly means to us. But if you remember the 2000 scandal of Monopoly at McDonald's, there's a pretty good Netflix series on that. The insiders that kind of rigged the game and stole millions. But now there's a lot more transparency, the digital verification, and kind of a renewed commitment in terms of legitimate, exciting prizes and a safe space to play the game. McDonald's has taken care of all that. I also really recommend the Founder on Netflix. It's a story of the origin of McDonald's, the McDonald's brothers, and then Ray Kroc and how Ray Kroc came into the picture. Like, it's totally a fascinating movie. So, truth. And I'm proving it right now. I am kind of fascinated by McDonald's. So, it made me think. Decades later, you know, why is the McDonald's Monopoly game such a big hit? Obviously, you have the thrill, the chance of winning, you know, and the small wins. You get that feeling of peeling back the sticker and winning a little something. You get that nostalgia factor that Monopoly brings to so many people. And then you just have the modern gamification of marketing. And that's how McDonald's keeps the engagement really high with these type of interactive experiences. The U.S. game now runs through November 2nd. You don't have to purchase anything to get a game piece. I got to remind you of that. Get all the official rules at McDonald's site. But the headline prizes, just briefly here, $1 million cash prize is the big thing. There's 2026 Jeep Grand Cherokee. There's American Airlines miles. There's theme park trips. There's electronics. And obviously a ton of fast food rewards that go into it. But you got to think, like, what if you won? How would you handle it? Have you ever really thought this through? Not only for a game like this where maybe you could win $1 million, but what if you had a big cash infusion in your life, like an inheritance or lottery or a business sale, whatever, a windfall of cash, so to speak. What's your plan to handle that? Today's guest is going to help map that out and much, much more for us. Northwestern Mutual's Flory Jerez Villaseñor will join us. October is, among other things, financial planning month. So I'm going to ask her a little bit about, you know, my fast food budget, and what if I won the Monopoly game? We'll look forward to that after the break. But as we do each and every show, we're going to first go two up.
Up one, two.
Now it's time for the
two, count 'em, two.
Two up on the upswing.
Two up, two things in the business world that I'm seeing that you need to know about right now. Keeping my eye on fashion for you. A fashion retailer that's actually expanding. Not here in Wisconsin, though, but this is why I want to talk about it. Uniqlo. is set to open 11 new stores in the United States in the spring and summer of 2026. It's going to open 4 in New York City and new flagships in Chicago and San Francisco. So they're going to expand the U.S. footprint from 78 to 89 stores, which is really interesting when you think about purposeful growth from fashion retailers. There's not any big stores from Uniqlo coming to the greater Milwaukee area or even Wisconsin, but there's 2 coming to Chicago on Michigan Avenue and at the Oak Brook Center. And these openings mark 20 years since Uniqlo's first U.S. store, which opened in Soho in 2006. The leadership at the Japanese-based fashion retailer is really being purposeful about finding prime markets and what its clothes are all about. What's Uniqlo, if you don't know? It's lifewear. It's clothes that help with real life. They're really comfortable, good price points, they're useful, and they're really easy to move in. It's a really cool brand. I think we got to keep an eye on how they continue to grow, because it's a really, really interesting model in terms of fashion forward, but good price points. Second up, young adults are embracing old tech, like flip phones and point-and-shoot digital cameras and CDs, to regain control over their attention, reduce social media pressure, and just make tech feel fun and tangible again. This is according to a Wall Street Journal report that was published last week. Choice overload comes at a cost. This is my interpretation here. Too many bells and whistles on our digital platforms make us gravitate to products that are simpler, that have more of a value proposition. Attention is pretty much a scarce asset these days, so authenticity over optimization is coming fast. So I'd like to think that many of our holiday gift guides, many of the holiday lists that we're all starting to put together are going to include some old school experiences like retro cameras, flip phones, even the old iPods, if you can find them. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Northwestern Mutual advisor Flory Jerez Villasenor joins us. Flory, thanks for taking time out of your day to be with us. So October is Financial Planning Month, and I saw a Northwestern Mutual Planning and Progress study that 46% of Americans say, you know, they're not quite totally financially prepared for the time that retirement comes. The same study said that 7 in 10 Americans are anxious or even get a little depressed when they start thinking about money. So we're gonna kind of have that as the baseline as we go through a bunch of different topics. But I want to just kind of first get your background and kind of what made you kind of choose the career path of financial planner?
Yeah, so my pathway is a little different than most.
Okay.
Most times, a lot of the advisors that come through our system are, you know, in school for this type of thing, finance, some things related to that. I actually am a career changer. So
okay.
I was in a different career prior to this. And I actually spent some time in corporate Northwestern Mutual before making the jump into the financial advisor space. And a lot of times people don't even know the difference. I'll get into that a little bit. But just backwards reverse, I was actually at a bank.
Okay.
I was working at a bank as a manager there. And once I graduated with my degree, I just really was encouraged to put it out, you know, on the social media, you know, the LinkedIns, the Indeed, Monster, all that stuff back then. And really, I was reached out to by a recruiter.
Okay.
And it was a real gamble because the recruiter who was reaching out to me was actually offering a contract position through the corporate space. And that comes with a lot of risk, right? There's nothing
risk
guaranteed.
Risk return, though. That's what financial planning is often about, right?
Exactly. You got to take the right risks.
Yeah.
So really just took a lot of time to, you know, weigh the pros and cons and decided, you know what, let's take that jump. Went into the contract role and then ended up getting hired in shortly after. I probably spent 2-3 months as a contractor.
Okay.
And at that time, Northwestern Mutual was actually rolling out their very first bilingual line. So a line that's going to offer our clients Spanish services. And that was one of my skill sets. So that's how I actually put, you know, got into the company Northwestern Mutual.
And you were born in Guatemala?
I was, yes. Okay. So I was born
in
Guatemala.
When did you come to the United States?
Very young. I was 3 years old.
All right.
So I pretty much, this is all I know, right?
Yeah.
Here, being here in the United States. We, you know, we visit Guatemala every here and there, but this is my home. I was raised here, but I was also raised with the roots of my culture. So speaking Spanish in the home, you know, cooking our Hispanic plates, all of that wonderful stuff. So the best parts I kept.
Is there then kind of a natural passion lane there for you in terms of clientele you want to serve and how you want to help give back?
That's a great question. Absolutely. I think what I've seen, especially coming from my background and experiencing what my parents experienced, really helps form like a bridge to reaching people like my parents to build wealth and to reach generations outside of just, I think with a lot of different families, the thought process is now, right? What can we do now? What can we buy now? I want to give my kids everything now. So really it's just helping them see the vision of the future and the generations to come. And that's kind of been really powerful in my life and in my story. And I feel like a lot of times people want to see themselves in the people who help them, right?
Yeah.
So that is the biggest trust factor when I'm speaking with people in that community.
Yeah, being able to see the future through eyes that are similar to your own are very important, whether it's a, you know, someone in your community or a mother or father. It's interesting. Our son just turned 18, so I had an Acorns account that we've been saving up for him that I kind of handed over to him. And so all the tools there are able to forecast, you know, if you save until you're 60 or 75, like he saw the dollars go up. And just, you know, having those tools at disposal from someone that you trust is really, really important. All right. I talked a bit about this in the show introduction that McDonald's, nice transition there from, you know, financial planning to fast food. But McDonald's has its Monopoly game now. And it's an added incentive not only to go to the fast food restaurant, but maybe to win a little bit. So I want to just get your thoughts, Flory, on, let's say I'm at McDonald's, I get that peel strip. And I won $1 million. All right. Kind of, I'm not going to jump up and down. I probably have a decent plan. But if somebody wins or inherits or has kind of a financial windfall that's unexpected, what's that first step and what's your recommendations?
Yeah. So the first step is really something that you shouldn't do.
Okay. That's good. That's good.
Which I, you know, in today's world, it's so easy to run and go post and share with everyone, right?
Yes.
So I would definitely recommend or advise against that unless you want to share your money with the rest of the world.
Okay. That's good. That's good. 101.
But the next step, I think, first and foremost, is really pausing to gather a team of professionals. I love that you set up an Acorn account with your son. And I have a lot of clients who usually start something like that on their own before they go get professional help. And I think when we're talking, you know, smaller amounts of money, it's a great way to, you know, dip your feet into the water and start investing and growing your money. But I think when we're talking about a large sum of money like that amount, like to that extent, it's best to get professional help and to go to people who live and breathe investments and money and growth and interest, all of that every day. And really just maximize your money growing money, right?
Yeah.
So I would definitely say create a team, and I would start with definitely a financial advisor. You can look me up and I'd be happy to help.
That's good.
But also an attorney. An attorney, definitely, because we want to talk through some estate planning.
Yeah.
We can never guarantee how long you're going to have here, right, or with that money. So you definitely want to have a attorney for estate planning. And then the third one that I would probably say is definitely a CPA or a tax professional, just to help you mitigate some taxes and help you kind of be as efficient as possible.
Yeah, that's a really good plan. I would add on top of that, and just kind of a general life thing for everyone is have like a personal board of directors, you know, people that can help guide your decision making, not only financial, but career moves, family moves and whatnot, and have those trusted forces that you can go to ask questions for when the unexpected happens, whether it's good or bad, because you know what? It's going to happen. We're talking with Northwestern Mutual's Flory Jerez-Vila. When we come back, Flory, I want to get your thoughts on generational differences in money. You're listening to The Upswing. This is WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Generational differences in money, October, among other things, is Financial Planning Month. I saw a recent study from Bank of America said 72% of Gen Z, and Gen Z, just to level set it, 13 to 28-year-olds, 72% of Gen Z individuals are taking proactive steps to improve their financial health, their budgeting, their investing. But that slips down to about 58% when you look at millennials in that 29 to 44 range. So just made me think, Flory, like in your work day to day, do you see big philosophical differences when it comes to generations and how they think and even spend money?
Yeah, I definitely have been seeing some big differences between different generations. I think one of the biggest shifts has definitely been home ownership. I've been working with a lot of younger clients who already might have an investment account, have a ton of money saved up in their retirement account, and maybe this third or fourth or fifth step is now finally starting to own a home or think about owning a home. So I think, you know, for later generations, home ownership was really step one. Yeah. And then everything else came second or third or fourth. But I think there's definitely some differences of opinion and just people seeing things differently with owning property and not necessarily home ownership.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you see differences in how generations view debt, whether it's a mortgage or credit card debt? I mean, are there differences there? Are there more risk aversion as you go younger?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a misconception across all of the generations, and it really depends on if you were planted the seed early on when you were younger on the financial education of just debt and how it works. So I think for some people, especially when they're listening to, you know, social media influencers and, you know, people who don't necessarily have the credentials but have a lot to say, they'll think all debt is bad debt, right?
Right.
You want to have cash on hand and pay for everything for cash, and you want to pay off your house as quickly as possible. But, you know, I always like to say that there is a difference between good debt and bad debt, and debt can really help you go to that next level. You know, when it comes to credit card debt or payday loans, I definitely do not encourage to do that unless you're going to pay off the rolling balance right away, month to month, with credit card debt. But there's definitely some fear, but I think that's instilled in people when they're younger, going through however their parents raised them.
Yeah. What about like social values and priorities, like sustainability and experiences? Does that factor into investment choices for generations?
Yeah, I haven't seen too much of that. I think, you know, even, you know, one of the things that I've noticed is that people don't necessarily have all of the information before they decide to move forward on something. Like, I'm going to give you a really good example of, you know, people oftentimes say, you know, have really good benefits through work. And then you get into, okay, tell me what those are. Well, I know they're really good benefits, but I don't know exactly what those are.
I haven't taken the time to read all the documents or had the meeting yet.
Yeah,
I know they're really good.
I know I'm saving for retirement. I know I'm doing really good in the retirement space, but they don't know exactly what that percentage is or what their match is. So I think even just the knowing of, like, what do I have?
How can
I leverage it is what I have been experiencing.
Yeah, and that's probably brings up another difference is just that how do you seek advice? Generations, you know, are so – there's a difference between online and person, right? You're going to get different data and you're going to be able to ask questions in a different manner and probably just – learn in a different way. Are you seeing that from a financial advisor standpoint, that the younger generations are so comfortable online, but then maybe not as comfortable sitting down one-on-one.
Yeah. I think that there is just the ease of access to information and being able to quickly search something on ChatGPT or Google has definitely made it easier for the younger generations to go online and look things up. I don't know how much confidence there is in that space because there is just so much information out there that oftentimes it can be overwhelming, even for the younger generation.
Yeah.
But I definitely would say that the older generations are more hesitant to just go online to find their answer, and they want to have more of a, you know, face-to-face type format to get answers to their questions and to trust that information more.
How many questions you get regularly about crypto and alternative assets?
Yeah, so crypto and what's the other one? Bitcoin, and crypto are definitely things that oftentimes younger generations, you know, people in their 20s, 30s, sometimes early 40s are asking.
Mm-hmm.
And my response is always like, if you're going to invest in that, I'm not going to tell you not to invest in it. You know, there can be really good returns in that, but have it be a percentage of your overall portfolio. It's not something that, you know, having a financial plan isn't being 100% invested in something like crypto or Bitcoin.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, Flory, I want to talk a little bit about just the state of the state, you know, uncertain economic times as these are. I mean, maybe someone would say, you know, they're always uncertain times. But if you're handed kind of a curveball, a financial curveball, how you deal with that and how you manage through conflict in our financial world. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Talking with Flory Jerez Villaseñor. Flory, again, appreciate your time spending a little bit with us on this Saturday morning. So I want to talk about navigating financial curveballs. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty in the economy always. We're always kind of looking to juggle this and juggle that. First, how do you define what a financial curveball is in life? Is it like an unexpected cost? Is it... How do you define that for your clients? And then how important is it to plan for these things in advance?
Mm-hmm.
And is it even realistic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would define that as something you don't plan for, right? So something that's not in the monthly budget, something that you don't foresee coming. So something like a flat tire or, you know, my 7-year-old just broke her arm last summer unexpectedly on the monkey bars. Things like that where you have to run out and spend a pretty hefty bill without having to plan for it. I think that it is realistic to plan for that type of thing, not necessarily knowing what that will be, but more so having that cushion or what we call in the financial planning world an emergency fund.
Okay.
And making sure that it's enough where it's going to cover at least 3 to 6 months of your monthly expenses, because some of those oopsie moments are things like getting laid off or getting injured or sick and not being able to have income coming in. So definitely want to make sure we have a pretty good cushion saved in emergency fund, labeled and used strictly for emergencies, not for saving up for a new roof or saving up for that trip to Greece. But you want to make sure that it's separate from everything else and that it's going to be used only for emergencies.
And then, you know, real world, how do you balance offense and defense that way? Like knowing that, well, this money's here, I can tap into it. But the reality is, I shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. So I think giving yourself a budget where you're going to know that you're spending, let's say, you know, I like to say 20% fun money, right? So money that you want to spend at restaurants, money that you want to spend for XYZ things that you like to do on your free time. And then the second part of that is, like I mentioned earlier, having that emergency fund separate. Oftentimes it can be like at a different account or institution than where you can easily put, you know, hit the transfer button put those 200, 400, whatever it is, back into your account to spend it.
Yeah.
So if you are a type of person that might not be so disciplined about not touching that money, then you definitely want to put some measures up so that you won't want to dip into that when you shouldn't.
Yeah, and knowing maybe what the ramifications of tapping into that money mean and making, you know, seeing those calculations and sitting down with the planner or sitting down with your spouse or whomever to really kind of run through the numbers and see what they mean. And then you can make a little bit more informed decision.
Yes.
So, but in those instances, you know, emotions can run kind of high, right? And, you know, how do you counsel around just making more level-headed financial decisions?
Yeah, so that is a role that I often play. I think one of the biggest roles that I play outside of just giving financial advice for investments or how to grow your money faster is the accountability piece. Mm. When you have someone outside of your normal circle that you can go back to and can really rationalize and give you different outcomes based on what it is that you're trying to do, they can really settle those high emotions that you're feeling in that moment and really give you just a solid recommendation on how to move forward.
Yeah. Having a coach in your corner is always a good thing, 100%. No matter what. Let's talk a little bit about holiday spending, if you will. And I'm guessing, you know, some of your answers may be somewhat similar, but it's a different festive time of the year. And you're looking at a lot of the forecasts already for the upcoming season. It looks like spending may be down a little bit. Budgets might be a little tighter. Prices are a little higher. But what's that perfect kind of, hey, how do I best plan for a season that I want to be super festive about, but I don't want to turn around in January and be like, oh my gosh, I overspent.
So yeah, I think you hit it on the head where some answers are going to be similar. I would absolutely agree that setting yourself up with a budget is definitely a great way to go into that. My family actually really loves to do the Secret Santa.
Okay.
So.
And you put a dollar amount on that?
Yeah, we do put a dollar amount on
that. Do people stick to it?
They do.
Okay,
they do.
Good.
They
that's
do.
Good. They follow
Sometimes we
got to
make
advice.
Sure there's a minimum too, right?
Yes, yes.
But they do. We do have like a range. Like, so there's a minimum amount you can spend and then there's a maximum amount you can spend. And there's also even the like, you know, categories of this is what I'm looking for. It's just so that the other person has an idea. But that way you're buying one really good gift instead of, you know, 15 different gifts that can really add up, right? It can be a big cost.
Yeah.
So the other thing that I would recommend is looking at last year's statements. So what did you spend last year? Is that realistic to spend the same amount this year? Is that something that I can budget for this year and starting to save earlier on and not waiting till the last minute, you know, Black Friday to go shopping? And then, you know, if you have kids like I do, I have a 2-year-old.
How old are your kids again?
So I have a 2-year-old, right. I have a 7-year-old, and I have a 16-year-old.
All right, that's going to keep you busy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So the 16-year-old, you know, he's getting to the age where everything that he wants is super expensive, right? AirPods, a new phone.
Shoes.
Oh, gosh,
and they're
$100
all like $300. Yes, oh, yeah. I'm there as well, yes.
But if you have a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old, I feel like one of the best ways to spend the holiday is just by spending time with them. And maybe doing an activity or something that is going to be more engaging for them. Because if you buy them a $50 toy, by the end of the week, they're probably going to move on. You know, so you spend all of that money in something that they're not necessarily going to continue to use.
Yeah.
So I just like the value of time spent.
Yeah. I know we're not even at Halloween yet, but I think it's good to always plan ahead and you create lifelong, not only memories, but you create lifelong lessons with holiday spending and knowing that, hey, this is kind of how our family does it or this is what you can expect. I think your kids will carry that on for generations, or at least that's what we as parents hope.
Mm-hmm.
All right. When we come back, Flory, I want to kind of dive into a little bit of Milwaukee recruitment and retention and talk to you a little bit about how you manage your day-to-day in our fine city. And a few other questions for you, too. Flory Jerez Villaseñor from Northwestern Mutual joins us. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. October is Financial Planning Month. Flory Jerez Villaseñor from Northwestern Mutual joins us in studio. So, Flory, as we're sitting here in downtown Milwaukee, you see a lot of the development and growth at Northwestern Mutual downtown with the towers. But there's a couple different versions of the team. And there's the field force, there's the home office staff. Like, just talk to us about kind of your day-to-day and where you spend time, how often you get downtown, how often you're in other remote locations.
Yeah. So I think Northwestern Mutual is definitely a dominant company here in Milwaukee, and a lot of times people don't know the difference between what the home office or our corporate headquarters is, and then our role as financial advisors and the staff of the financial advisors are out in the community. So I definitely would say that if people have seen the big, beautiful glass tower downtown, that's where our corporate employees are. So, you know, think law, compliance, anyone who really helps support us as financial advisors, they're employees and they work in the big, nice, fancy glass building downtown Milwaukee. We as financial advisors, we have offices across the country. So Milwaukee being one of them. I'm originally from Kenosha. I live in Franklin. So there's also an office in Franklin, but all across Wisconsin and then across the country, we have detached offices. We also have what we call network office buildings where there's many advisors and teams working there. So I work all over the place.
You know, and you have the flexibility to do so. There's no like return to office mandate for the advisors that you must be in the tower.
Exactly. So that's the biggest difference between us, as, you know, the employees and then us. We have really the autonomy to own our practices and our schedules and how we want to see people. I work with a lot of older generations who do prefer still the face-to-face. And a lot of our younger generations are very quick to say, yes, let's hop on a Zoom call. So a lot of times I'm meeting with people virtually. And then, of course, I have clients who are across the country. So, I'll, you know, that's the only option unless I'm going to fly over to Florida, California. It'd be nice at this time of year. But
I will say that as a passionate downtown Milwaukee fan and do a lot of work in the market, the new Starbucks location at Northwestern Mutual is amazing because you have that outdoor deck. And then you can kind of walk in and the whole area there is open to anyone. It's not just for Northwestern Mutual employees, which really creates a nice synergy and like wonderful networking opportunities. And I think that's really important too when we look at the big corporations that have homes right here in Milwaukee. Let's talk a little bit more about the Milwaukee area. Do you have any favorite places when you are meeting with clients in terms of lunch places or just favorite neighborhoods in the area?
Yeah, so I actually do love to meet people at the Starbucks. You brought up a really good point. Like the campus in at Northwestern is beautiful. Like the, you know, the landscaping, just the ability to have either be in the free space outside. They have like the doors or the tables and a lot of places to sit and chat and talk and walk around. And then, of course, the wonderful coffee at Starbucks. But they also have a lot of sitting spaces within the commons area there. So that is definitely one of my favorites. I would say I like to also go to a lot of the cafe shops around there. One of the ones that I recently have been at is Colectivo. So I like to go to Colectivo a lot to meet people there.
Yeah, very good. What about just give me thoughts on just general like recruitment, retention of other young professionals in the area? Like, it's such a hot topic for all corporations. You know, how do we keep college graduates in the area? How do we incent them to stay? What are your general thoughts on just the difference points in Milwaukee and Wisconsin?
Yeah, so I think we've been blessed with having just a lot of awesome colleges and education learning institutions right around the corner. So we have MSOE, we have UW-Milwaukee, Alverno, there's just so many great schools in the area. So we have easy access to them and often are going to business fairs or college fairs and making the connection there. But I think what a lot of young professionals are looking for is, again, something we talked about earlier, but making the connection of seeing themselves in other advisors. So I think someone like a story like mine really connects with them and understanding what it it is that they want from their career, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of times entrepreneurship is a big hot topic right now. Yeah. And that is something that can easily encourage someone to ask more questions and to find out if it's a good career path for them. So definitely the connection and the relationship there.
Yeah. And just knowing that that recruitment and retention journey, like, you know, we want to control everything in our lives, but frankly, we control nothing, but we influence everything, right? And I think that's really, really important. Finally, Flory, as I ask many of our guests, I'd love you to just define success, especially as somebody that works in the finance industry every day. It's often really easy to anchor it to a dollar and cent point, but define success.
Yeah, so I recently came out of a workshop actually at our headquarters, and they gave a bit of advice that just really resonated with me, and it really defines success for me. So the recommendation or the advice goes, don't just live a busy life, live a life that's full. So there's differences there, right? A busy life versus a life that's full. And for me, really, that's being with people that I care about and making an impact beyond myself, right? So whether that's at home with my kiddos or that's with clients or potential clients or out in the community, but really being fulfilled in something bigger than myself.
Yeah, I love it. All right. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day, and all the best in the future.
Thank you, Jeff.
Finally today, a friendly reminder, WTMJ.com. You can get all past episodes of The Upswing and all of the other wonderful shows at WTMJ, plus a bunch of shows that don't air live on the radio. There's just so many options. Check out WTMJ.com for more. And when you're out and about walking, you put the podcasts on, you listen to all of them. Go for a walk this weekend. If you're traveling through Walker's Point, you're going to notice some new rainbow crosswalks at the intersection of 2nd and National. They are designed by international street artist Jeremy Novoy. Jeremy's probably best known for the stencils of the koi fish that are all over Greater Milwaukee that started here, those black, white, and orange fish that get painted throughout the city sidewalks. Really cool, wonderful designs. The city greenlighted this project last year. Highly recommend you check out the new rainbow sidewalks in Milwaukee's Walker's Point. And then go back to your neighborhood in your community and advocate for sidewalk painting all across the area.